Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
And good morning, everybody. Kristen Bry, of course, Steve Scafidi on Point Taken. Thanks for finding the time to listen. We appreciate each and every one of you. You can always find us if you missed part of the show on our podcast page, WTMJ.com. A lot of great content. We do a lot of different things here at WTMJ. Just had a long conversation about our podcast. One of the things upstairs, let me finish that thought before
multiple
I start
podcasts.
My podcast.
Well, you and I do one podcast.
I actually
you do multiple.
If you count Cheap Seats, which has had one episode for a long time.
You can't count that one.
I'm counting because we have a new one coming up.
Oh!
Yes, breaking news. Myself and Alex Stroh, who I work alongside with at the Packers home games.
ESPN teammate.
Yep, ESPN teammate, 94.5. Brilliant broadcaster. Smart kid at the age of 26. Way smarter than I was at the age of 26. I don't know what you can say about yourself at 26. Were you smart at 26?
Pretty smart at 26.
Okay. Anyway, so we spent the entire program yesterday talking about the Minneapolis school shooting in a lot of different ways. We're going to stay on that story for at least the first half hour today. We've got a guest coming in, one of our state reps, Deb Andranka, who I've had on the show many times. You've talked to her as well.
She's been on here recently. She filled in for Joe a couple
That's
over
true.
The summer.
Yeah, and she's on this issue. She's one of the best people talking about, I think, some real solutions. Somebody said to me, will you be talking about this today? I go, absolutely, because I don't want to be one of those shows that sort of talks about it and then just like, let's move on to the next thing, you know? I don't want to be one of those shows. Not that there's a ton of stuff happening in Washington, although there is. And we're not going to talk about Buc-ee's. Someone just sent that in. I want to focus on where do we go from here? And as we get ready for Deb to come in a few minutes, I'll say this. A lot of people sent me a lot of emails last night. I got some texts during the lots of texts during the program. Whenever you say something, it's like people fixate on that one thing. And I'm not saying that. There's a lot of different
What was the one thing they thought you were fixing?
Red flags, red flag laws. That's one piece of a very complex puzzle in not eliminating, because you're never going to eliminate people's ability to do dangerous, violent things, but at least reduce the likelihood.
Maybe we should study it.
Study it in what way?
Like allow the CDC to study gun violence.
Yeah, maybe because that department
issue.
Was canceled.
And the Office of Gun Violence Prevention.
Did DOGE do that?
Canceled.
Was that a DOGE thing?
It happened in February, so it was still when DOGE was
So
strong and mighty.
Yeah, so maybe. And Bill, Joe, and I are going to talk about DOGE tomorrow in a different sense because, as I said months ago, that whole it's a fiasco. It's a waste of time. Now there's incredible data security risks. So our approach in the next 20, 30 minutes is going to be, what are the pieces of this puzzle to sort of slow this down?
The policy side of this.
Yeah. I mean, that's where I want to spend my time. There are things we can do. You know, you talked about the ban on assault weapons, automatic weapons, years ago, decades ago now.
And so how was it, 94 to 2004?
In the 90s. Yeah, yeah. And it worked. But then it was taken away, and we sort of have this, you know, implosion, this you know, mass violence escalation that we've seen since then, where I'm not going to accept that, well, that's just, you know, what we have in this country. We're a violent country for a lot of different reasons. No, why would we accept that? We don't accept anything else that's dangerous, right? We try to, well, I guess I'm going to correct myself. We were working on, like, cures for cancer. You know, we thought
we'll
get
rid of Red Dye 40.
Yeah, we're doing that. Yeah, I guess. Little baby steps, but can there be baby steps on gun violence? I think so. Little things we could do as a country. So we're going to explore that from a lot of different angles, and I guess I don't want to feel bad every few weeks because some little child or any person has been killed in the act of praying, which is what happened yesterday, or going to a mall or going to a concert, going to a public event. Like, why would we ever accept that? So for all those that sort of say, well, you know, that's the price of freedom, that's the country we live in, blah, 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 and blame it on the criminals – we got to be smarter than that.
I just don't know why we accept that as the status quo.
I don't know why either. It makes me nuts. It seems silly to me.
That there's not a shared feeling that even if they don't agree with some of the policies that are being presented, that there should be conversation around it. It doesn't have to be like this.
Interesting.
Instead of just shrugging your shoulders.
Texters, where do we go from here? Countries start caring more about each other. I agree. More about kids, less about guns. That's one of the texters. This one I get a lot too. And I saw this yesterday pop up in gym and I didn't read it. What do we feel about certain members of Congress sending Christmas cards with guns as props? I said it when I've seen it and talked about it on previous shows. It is, to me, the most insane celebration of Christmas or the holidays I could ever think of. That some idiot, yes, I said the word idiot, sorry, Kathy, would do a Christmas or a holiday card and have all of them all dressed up in their, you know, their finest holiday clothes. And they're all carrying, like, automatic weapons and, you know, pretty some heavy, heavy guns as part of their greeting. In what world does that make sense to anybody? Like, is that the message of Christmas, if you're a Christmas person, that you want to send to people that,
well, damn right, baby Jesus gonna, with an AK-47?
We're going to defend our Christmas. Yes, you're not going to take our guns away, blah, blah, blah. No one's ever suggested that we take our guns away, at least no one with any connection to reality, because we're not going to do that. But at some point, common sense has to creep in. That's sort of the point of where we're going to go for the next few minutes. So she's Kristen. I'm Stephen's Point Taken. After the break, one of our state reps represents the area just north of us here, sort of the Whitefish Bay. Mm-hmm. I think it goes all the way up to Fox Point and beyond. Devin Draca joins us, and she's well-spoken on this issue. I look forward to the conversation that's next on 620 WTMJ. Thanks for joining us in the conversation today on Point Taken. Kristen Bry, Steve Scavidia on 620 WTMJ. Joining us in studio, she's been here before. She actually jumped in on one of our
Friday shows.
Where was I at? Oh, I was in Scotland, right?
Probably.
Yeah, it one of my many trips.
Bill, Devin Draca, and I. Welcome back.
Thanks. It's good to be here. I can't wish we were here under better circumstances.
Absolutely. For people unfamiliar, you have been a strong advocate for addressing gun laws in Wisconsin. So we'll get to what are some of the legislation you think would move the needle in Wisconsin. But just talking about Minnesota, not that you're an expert in Minnesota gun laws, but one of the, I think, go-to resources for tracking states and their gun laws is Everytown. Everytown's gives Minnesota number 14 in the country for gun law strength. We're number 23, so they're doing better than us, according to Everytown. And yet, here we are. They have a red flag law. And so, as you might expect, yesterday, as Steve and I spent the whole 2 hours talking about this, we got texts and some calls saying gun laws aren't going to change anything. We already have laws and they're not enforced. And you can't, you know, this is a mental health issue. And so what do you say when you hear those objections?
Well, we can take them one by one, but just broadly speaking, we have speed limits. People still speed. We don't take them away. There is no one quick fix. There are more guns out there than there are people in the United States in this country. And so there isn't a simple answer. There are things that we can do, different kinds of measures and laws that we can put in place that can help prevent many of these mass shootings and prevent them from happening over and over and over again, and also help prevent gun suicides. We need to be able to talk about them because, like we said, there's no one quick fix. So let's start looking at what is working. We know that states that have stronger gun laws have lower rates of gun deaths. That has been proven over and over again. Do they eliminate all shootings? Absolutely not. But we need to start talking about what is working and what we can bring to Wisconsin.
One of the things that when we talk about these sort of policy ideas is Second Amendment. You cannot infringe on my rights. I would argue that there's already some infringements. You can't take a gun on a plane, for example. There's a lot of variations on that theme. But I always tell people when you're angry about what your elected official is not doing on an issue, ultimately, we all vote for those people. So if you're absolutely out of your mind, angry or disgusted or disappointed in what your elected official is doing, then when you get to the ballot box next time or the voting place, that's your opportunity. Even I'm talking about Republicans and Democrats.
Yeah.
If you're a Republican representative, it won't acknowledge the issue, refuses to engage on the issue, town halls, public meetings, then maybe you need to reassess, because if you're truly passionate about this issue, and we should all, because it's disgusting, the level it's reached. I mean, we are literally sending kids to school who are then shot. And in this case, they were in church at their school and shot through a window. So we can talk about security a lot, and I've talked about that in the past, but this probably wouldn't help that because this shooter shot through a window. I think we have to get back to telling people you can shape the future conversation. And I'll just add one more question because I know you want to jump in on this. I'm fairly optimistic that younger people, maybe I'm wrong on this, who have experienced a lifetime now of dealing with these things, when they become voters, might have a different opinion than maybe, say, people of my age or slightly younger. Do you agree with that?
Yes. When you and I were in school, school shootings were not even a thing.
Even
they've
for me,
become
I mean,
a thing.
Yeah.
So we need to start looking at what has changed. Our gun laws have changed. The assault weapons ban has expired. But I'll talk a little bit about, you know, why am I even sitting here? I mean, I was working as an elementary school teacher, and I was frustrated. And anyone who, you know, wants to ignore the issue, particularly of school shootings, because that's what really gets me as a parent and as a human, needs to be in a classroom. So I was working as a substitute teacher, and you do lockdown drills. And it's just more visceral when you are in a classroom full of third graders and you're huddled, you know, underneath the smart board or in a corner of a classroom and they're completely silent. I mean, it is scary and it's creepy because anyone who's been in a classroom knows that kids are never that quiet, but they're scared. And I had an incident where I was working as a substitute, and when you're a sub, you get that call at 5:30 in the morning, you grab a key, you go to the classroom, and I got the wrong key. And we were having a lockdown drill. And the school resource officer was checking doors, and mine wasn't secure. And he came into the classroom, yelled at me, in front of my students, and the look of fear on that on their face was, I couldn't do it anymore, and that is what motivated me to call my state rep, and my state rep, you know, sort of gave me some mushy answers and stopped taking my calls. So I brought my daughter and her friends to their town hall. This was before I even thought I'd be a state representative, and they stopped having town halls. And so I went and I helped organize with a group called Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense. You know, let's go talk to our state representatives. And I was in the gallery of the state assembly, and Governor Evers called a special session on gun laws. Like, what are we doing here? We need to start talking about this. And the legislators, they gaveled in and they gaveled out in less than 30 seconds. And that was when I realized, you know, if we can't change our legislators' minds, I'd have to change their job. And so I ran.
Do you think most Wisconsinites would support mandatory comprehensive background checks?
Yes.
For everything. I'm talking gun shows and...
Well, because you represented a purple district.
Yes.
And so when you talk about this with your constituents, some of whom are Republicans, what are the conversations like?
I mean, the issue's not partisan. Poll after poll says that people support these laws. In fact, there was just a poll that came out this past February. The Marquette poll says that 85% of Wisconsinites support red flag laws, or the ability to take firearms away from people who are dangerous after a judge with evidence prevented. We know these laws are popular. Why don't we have background checks on all gun sales? Now, the gun show loophole is a misnomer, because most firearm retailers who go to gun shows are licensed gun sellers. So anyone who is a licensed firearms dealer has to run a background check.
I'm not worried about those folks.
No, but Wisconsin state law right now, you can buy a firearm from anyone online, meet them in the Sendix parking lot, and that you don't need to run a background check. And that's scary.
She's State Rep Deb Andraca joining us for another segment on Point Taken after the break. And I can see the text line. A lot of questions about what's the role of mental health, mental illness in this question. We'll address that after this on 620 WTMJ. Thanks for joining us on this Thursday edition. Kristen will be off tomorrow. I'll just give you a heads up on that.
Unfortunately, the worst day to miss.
Well, Bill and Joe, I mean, it's always...
There's a lot of talk about with Joe and Bill tomorrow.
Yeah, and obviously this story will be part of that. Deb Andraca, state rep, is joining us. For the folks who are listening and don't know exactly where your district is, just sort of lay that out for us.
It's northern Milwaukee County and southern Ozaukee County. So Fox Point, Bayside, River Hills, Brown Deer, Mequon, Thiensville. Hello.
My Fox Point relatives say hi and thanks for your service.
Excellent.
All right, so lots of texts are saying, you know, whatever we do... Someone who's got mental health issues and wants to commit a heinous act will do that. I'm not accepting that. I don't just give in to whatever, you know, the popular sort of idea is, like, to not do something is. I'm not going to do that. In the state of Wisconsin, what are we doing to sort of, you're not going to eliminate, but reduce the likelihood that someone who's having those challenges, mental health in high school or schools, in the general population, what are we doing? How are we funding those initiatives to at least sort of help in this fight against mass shootings.
Well, the last state budget did have an increase in funding for school-based mental health services. That's important. But when we're talking about mental health in the context of guns, I want to be very clear. Lots of people have mental health challenges. That doesn't mean that they all are a danger to themselves or to others. We know how to treat mental health. And the United States does not have a disproportionate number of people suffering from a mental health crisis. Other countries have them too. We are the only country that arms them and allows easy access to firearms. When I started talking to my state legislators about this issue, one of the things they would push back on is, we don't need these. We have Chapter 51. And I was a third grade teacher. I'm like, what's Chapter 51? Well, in state law, if somebody has been diagnosed with a mental health disorder, this is important, the diagnosis, and they are presenting as a risk, you can have them involuntarily confined at a mental health facility. The vast majority of people who commit these shootings don't have a diagnosis. They kind of come out of nowhere. And so if your state legislator is quoting Chapter 51, which is why we don't need to do anything, there are gaping holes in our existing gun laws that don't keep people safe.
I have friends who have dealt with a child, then a young adult who had serious mental health challenges and was violent, including to them. And they told me time after time, we're trying to get help and we can't get help, especially for a young adult, not a kid, not a child in school.
Right.
What do we do in those situations? How can we remedy that?
It is really hard. I mean, so I have two young adult children. Once your child turns 18, you don't have access to their medical records. And so early intervention, of course, is important for any mental health challenge. But it's something that we need to be addressing. But we can't address it if we can't have public hearings and talk about what needs to be done.
So let's talk about that after the news as far as what has been introduced, what is gained some kind of support, bipartisan support in the legislature, and what has had a standstill.
Yeah, if you have thoughtful, relevant text you'd like to send, 855-616-1620, the Siding Unlimited WTMJ Talk and Text Line. We'll try to weave those into the conversation as well. State Rep. Deb Andraca, representing area just north of us here in downtown Milwaukee. Point taken on a Thursday. We're looking back to yesterday, but you can look well beyond that at the story of mass shootings, in this case in a Minneapolis K-8 school in a church setting where an individual shot through a window and killed two children, ages 8 and 10, and injured adults and children. Deb Andraca, state rep, joining us. Paul Booker weighs in. He's in front of the station and is a smart guy. He expresses a thought that a lot of people have about the arming of civilians, especially in churches or schools, I would say hopefully well-trained and, you know, with the right to carry. That argument that having more citizens be part of the defense against mass shootings, what do you make of it?
Well, I am a gun owner. I have my concealed carry permit. There are things that we can do to make sure that the people who do carry are better trained and are better prepared. And so we need to start looking at what are the people who are carrying? Are they doing it safely? And are they taking their responsibility as a gun owner? We talk all about our rights. We need to talk about our responsibilities. I think it was Spider-Man who was like, with great power comes great responsibility. Having a gun is great power. So what are you doing to keep people safe? When I got my concealed carry permit, I never had to fire a gun. It was a written test. They showed us how to safely load and unload the ammunition, check to make sure that the gun wasn't loaded. And that was it. I had to take basic handgun certification in order to ever fire my firearms.
And you probably had to pay for that,
and
right?
I had to pay for it. So what percentage of the people who are armed have actually taken that extra step? I would like to think, and I know, most responsible gun owners go to the range regularly and keep their skills sharp. We know not everybody does that. So we could have better requirements. I just renewed my concealed carry permit. It was a piece of paper in the mail. I haven't been to the range in, you know, several years.
Do you carry a gun with you?
I do not right now. Okay.
But given what happened in Minnesota with their lawmakers who are just at their homes.
And there is a lot of fear. And I would, you know, one of the largest people who are groups of people who are getting their concealed carry permit are women. Mm-hmm. Domestic violence. There are reasons people want and need to have firearms. But we can do better as a state to make sure that they're doing it safely and responsibly.
What? Go ahead.
I was going to shift to what legislation has been discussed or what more we could be doing. Is there something else you wanted to follow up on what she said?
I definitely want to talk about social media and the role of those companies at some point.
All right. Let's come back to that.
Okay.
But talk about some of the things that legislation you've introduced, what is happening when it happens to a public hearing, things that actually have momentum, what gets killed. What has that been like since you've joined the legislature?
First of all, just to answer that, we don't need more laws. We just need to enforce the laws that we already have. Yes, but we also need to make the laws that we already have better. So with universal background checks, 85% of Wisconsinites support that. The background check law right now is if you have your if you're a licensed firearm dealer, you have to do a background check. But you can buy a gun off of anybody online, meet them in the Target
parking
lot. Like
Facebook Marketplace.
Yeah, Facebook Marketplace. This is how domestic abusers get their guns.
Do you agree with me that that's one of the biggest problems? Is that sort of that illegal selling of guns?
But it's not illegal.
I should say dangerous selling of guns to people that shouldn't have guns. They're just doing it off away from the eyes of the law and any scrutiny that would sort of prevent these things, these bad things from happening.
And people will say, well, you know, that criminals and people who are dangerous, they'll find a way to get a gun. Let's make it harder so that they have to work a lot harder and we don't have so many people getting their hands on firearms. So we need the background check loophole closed. We need a 48-hour waiting period reinstated. So right now, we did have it. It was taken away in 2015. Most gun deaths in Wisconsin are suicides. We need to make sure that there is some sort of cooling off period before that. We need a red flag law and we need safe storage requirements. In the instance of schools, 76% of school shootings, the shooters are getting the guns from their own home or from a relative.
If you know, this came from a texter, if a person has a gun stolen, if they don't report it, is that something that the owner, the previous owner of that gun could get in trouble for? Is there a law that related to that? Because that happens a lot too. We just saw a story in the Journal Sentinel this week about the increase in guns being stolen in and around Pfizer Forum, area there.
We introduced a bill last year we'll be introducing to require guns in cars to be secured. I've talked with the mayor of Milwaukee. That's one of the number one sources of illegal guns is you're breaking into cars and taking them from there. We need to make sure that they are secure. There's lots of little things. I mean, there's no one quick fix. There are things that we can do so that we have layers of protection to make sure that the number of violent shootings goes down.
All right. Can you stick around for one more segment? All right. Let's get to social media because I think there's a lot of these manifestos or these warning signs that go out that are essentially not monitored and ignored that in some cases could have at least put a roadblock up or at least given some warning to the potential victims that something bad might be happening. So we'll talk about that with State Rep Deb Andraca after this on Point Taken on 620 WTMJ. State Rep Deb Andraca joining us on the program today. We are talking about sort of what happens after the mass shooting, because I mean, there's the thoughts and prayers, which, as I said yesterday, is great. But then there should be, if someone sends out thoughts and prayers, your next question to that person, if they're an elected official or leader, local leader, all right, so what are we going to do about this? So I want to talk briefly about the role of social media companies, the tech companies, because they have incredible technology, AI, to sort of look at things that are happening. Now, it's not going to be perfect, and things, you know, apparently in this case, the manifesto, as they like to call it, went out after. Apparently.
Because I had thought that because that was my big thing yesterday. It's like, where are these content companies, these social media companies, as far as their ability to monitor all of this and not having any enforcement as far as their responsibility to alert authorities? Now, I found out later that the manifesto was scheduled to go out on YouTube after and hadn't just been sitting there they didn't know that it was sitting there and didn't do anything about
that. That may be true, but I bet it, as we learn about this individual, that there maybe have been signals.
A different digital footprint.
Yes. So, I mean, what should the role, and what, I guess more relevant, what can state electeds do about sort of those tech companies to sort of say, okay, you got to do something here because we know that, you know, just bullying that happens online, kids killing themselves because their friends, not friends, their bulliers are, you know, tormenting them day and night, can't get away. But on this issue, that they should be able to do something.
The social media companies, they're hard to regulate on a state level because you can just go find the video that you're looking for. So that's more of a federal issue. The federal government could be cracking down on them, making them monitor their content better. There's lots of things that they could be doing. On the state level, when it comes to school shootings and mass shootings, in almost 100% of cases, there were warning signs. And so we need to make sure that there is a culture of if you see something, say something. And, you know, where do you say it and to whom do you say it to make sure that those structures are in place?
Well, and especially like you were saying before, when it's not teenagers, when it is adults and behavior that you're seeing as far as someone who is not under the, you know, not guidance, what's the word that I wanted? So the supervision of a parent or any other kind of adult, is there mechanisms in place to say, hey, this person does not seem okay when I see them posting these types of things on Facebook?
Who would you report that to if you see that kind of behavior?
Right now, you could report it to your local law enforcement, but we don't have the red flag law, the extremist protection order in Wisconsin. So a perfect example, in Mequon, just over the border in my district a couple of years ago, there was a gentleman who had a lot of firearms and was very threatening. People were scared that he might do something. The police were called to his house 15 times, but he hadn't broken any law. So my constituents, they were living near someone who they saw was dangerous and a threat. Well, eventually he started shooting his gun and then it became a shootout. So we need the ability to respond and to make sure that we're doing the right thing to keep the public safe.
Let's end it this way. You're elected representative of the state of Wisconsin. One of how many reps in the state?
99.
99. What's the likelihood we'll see something happen? Bipartisan. On the issue of gun violence, mass shootings in the next session.
Here's what's so frustrating, and I've been working on for a long time. Democrats are introducing these bills year after year after year, and they're not getting a public hearing. Republicans have a majority right now in both the Senate and the Assembly. If they wanted to, they could have a public hearing on any of these bills and vote it down and say why. If they wanted to, we could have a public hearing and say, we like this part of the bill, but let's change this part of the bill. 100%. We can't fix gun violence if we can't talk about it. And I'm tired of a lot of my colleagues talking to me in private saying, yes, I recognize this. This is a good idea. But then, or going to their constituents and saying, I would totally support that. It didn't come to the floor for a vote. That's wrong. If you are represented by a Republican, reach out to them. Go to the legislative website. You can just click Find My Legislator. What are they doing in their caucus? Will they hold a public hearing on these bills? And can we start talking about ways? It's not going to be foolproof. It's not going to fix the problem, but it might prevent one shooting. And that shooting might be a shooting that would have happened at your kid's school.
It's interesting you mention that because I told you during one of the breaks, I've had many conversations with elected representatives on my side of the aisle. And what they say in these private conversations is often very different than their public stance on this issue. I find that disgusting. And I think that if you feel strongly personally, the best representation for a community and a constituent in your district is to also represent that passion that you have for that issue when you vote in public. And that's, is that hard for some people? I guess. And we spoke yesterday about the power of lobbyists, which have fundamentally too much power in this country, even at a state level. And I think that has to change. Devin Draca, always a great pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on this issue. I think it's something that we will continue to talk about. You're listening to Point Taken, Kristen and Steve on this Thursday edition right here on 620 WTMJ. Thursday on Point Taken. Kristen will be off tomorrow, extended. That's going to be a nice little break. You're going to a wedding or something?
I'm going to a wedding. It's my cousin Aiden's wedding. Very excited for him and his fiance. They're both wonderful. But they have chosen to get married on Labor Day weekend on a Friday.
You basically got to get there
in time. You got to take Friday off to get to the wedding. But then there's nothing else planned for the rest of the weekend. And so...
So we have a lot of younger teammates. I asked this question the last time there was like a wedding. Apparently the Friday thing is going to be almost the standard now, which surprises
Why?
Me. I don't know. I think it's cheaper.
Well, it's definitely cheaper, right? You have more options as far as your ability to get the venue that you want on a Friday versus a Saturday, but it puts more of a burden on your guests, especially if they have to travel to get there, that they have to maybe leave Thursday to be able to get there and be there on Friday. Especially if your wedding is at 3 or 4, so that you can have the party into the evening. It's just a different request for your guests.
Yeah, and it's funny because we're talking about relationships. Well, last week we talked about the Travis Kelce, Taylor Swift thing on You Need to Listen, which just text listen and you can hear that because we had
855-616-1620.
Ton of people listened to it and watched it on YouTube. Thanks for all those views. And this week we're talking about sort of a weird twist on dating and people meeting each other. But I think the wedding thing, the relationship, it's just changed so much that we should get out of the mindset that like it's going to be like it was, like the Saturday, you get married in the afternoon, the reception's at night, you have a band and they play, you know, and you do, this is really going old school, chicken dance and all, they don't do any of that anymore. The garter thing, remember, are you old enough to remember that, where they had the, none of that.
Many weddings with a garter. I did not do the garter at my wedding.
I don't think anybody does it anymore.
I think they do.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe in Wisconsin.
I think throwing the bouquet and doing the garter is still a thing.
Really?
Okay. Not every wedding.
So they haven't abandoned everything.
No.
What is that one saying that the brides do, the something borrowed?
Something borrowed, something blue. New, something blue. Something blue.
Is that still
something
a thing?
New, something old, something borrowed, something blue.
Yeah. Is that still a thing? I don't think so.
It depends.
I don't think so.
I don't know if I did it.
Yeah. I mean, it's completely off subject. We're going to talk about Milwaukee politics and the stories shaping Milwaukee with Jeremy Jeanine.
Yeah. Haven't seen him in a while.
Yeah. Well, he was on vacation.
He was on vacation. Yeah. And yeah.
Maybe he went to Minnesota. I don't know. We'll find out.
We will find out.
All right. So that's all coming up. We'll try to weave in some fun at the end of the hour. Actually, we're going to have a fun conversation with my friend Oak Creek Lion, Scott Koenig. They have their big Labor Day festival this weekend. And he's going to join us on the phone. They're partners with us on WTMJ. You can hear their ads running throughout the day parts. Sort of a fun way to approach Labor Day. It looks like they're going to have fantastic weather, which when you're planning stuff like that, that's always
all you can hope for.
Yeah. Beer will be drunk, whatever.
Beer will be poured?
Beer will be
unless
certainly
it's all cans, then I don't know what to tell you.
I don't know what they do out there, but I'll have to figure it out. Anyway, lots more to get to. Hour 2, Point Taken, coming up after the news on 620 WTMJ.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
Welcome to the 11 o'clock hour, the second hour of Point Taken. It is Thursday, so we are joined by Jeremy Jeanine of Urban Milwaukee. It's been 2 weeks?
2 weeks, and I don't think I've been in this studio because you guys were at State Fair before that, and I was off for another week. It's
been sometime in July. We've been inconsistent lately, as summer sometimes is wont to do to people's schedules.
How the hell you been, Jeremy? Let's just start with that.
I've been fantastic. Right. School is starting, and I'll be back on a schedule now.
There you go.
All right. So apparently there is such a thing as actual voter fraud, because we're going to start with a story that you reported, Urban Milwaukee, about an actual case.
And this is a very strange case of voter fraud. I don't think any elections were negatively impacted in any way, shape, or form. But the nature of this person's position is really what draws attention to
it. That is the hook.
Yeah,
there.
It doesn't seem like she was really caring who she was voting for. It was there was a bottom line.
Yeah. So Marcy Patterson was for more than a decade an aide in Mayor Tom Barrett's office in various positions. And then around the time Cavalier Johnson became mayor, she moved to a command staff job in the police department, civilian job. She was an engagement director. You would see her at all kinds of press conferences, a lot of community events. She was kind of the face of the police department alongside the officers engaging with the community. $112,000 a year job, I think I reported.
Yeah.
Marcy Patterson owned a home in Milwaukee with her mom, but she has a very interesting definition of a primary residence, and that's her problem now, is that she voted from this Milwaukee address, but she admits she didn't live there. And so she was living in Glendale and Brown Deer at various points since 2018, casting votes like she's a Milwaukee resident. So she wasn't voting twice. You're like, why does this really I mean, like, that's clearly wrong, but also not like a high-level fraud thing.
Don't we also have a representative who is maybe living in two places right now as well?
Yeah, we talked about that like a month ago.
They're representing someone. She's just a voter, but... But the catch is that city employees, as Marcy would know from being in the mayor's office, starting in 2019, city employees that are non-sworn, so not firefighters or police officers, they get a 3% pay bonus if they live in the city of Milwaukee. And so she now has $10,000 that she owes the city.
All right. Define live. So this person, you said, has at least three residences or two residences?
She moved from Brown Deer to Glendale at some point.
Okay, so she has two residences, one in Milwaukee that she her mom.
Yep.
So what would define residence in Milwaukee?
Well, for her,
legally,
her justification was her driver's license. I don't know the distinction for a voter, specifically what defines a voter.
I think that's the question, right?
In the way the criminal complaint reads, they have her on that.
So they have her on voter fraud, not on, I don't know, whatever it would be as far as she shouldn't be getting paid the extra money.
Right.
But that seems like the bigger problem, because if she didn't, what do people do when they live abroad? Like, there's people who vote in elections when they're not necessarily in that place. It's a bigger deal. I imagine if they're voting twice.
Well, and this gets like the Tim Michaels thing, where there's a certain number of days that you have to live in Wisconsin to be considered a resident.
Okay.
And if you're just temporarily abroad, that's a whole thing. In Marcy Patterson's case, there's a 2 or 3 page criminal complaint. She's charged with voter fraud, but the document spends a lot of time laying out how she defrauded the city, but there's no charge for that. And if you want to read between the lines there, what you can expect to see when she's due in court on the 15th of September is probably the start to a plea bargain, where she maybe pleads guilty to this voter fraud charge to a lesser penalty, because she could face jail time for this. But maybe she pleads guilty to a misdemeanor, and then she pays restitution to the city for this $10,000.
I mean, I'm not an attorney, but if I'm an attorney defending her, I would say, look, she owns the property. How do you know she didn't spend 6 months or whatever the rule is? That seems like a reasonable response to a question of your identity and where you live. I would make that argument.
Except for she admits it during her interview.
That's a problem. Your own
so
statement.
So that is a good question beyond
yes.
Marcy Patterson. So for people who own a cabin
yep.
in Wisconsin, so they split residence between being in Milwaukee and being in Minocqua. They chose to vote in Minocqua, but they spent most of their time in Milwaukee. Could they be charged with voter fraud?
I think possibly, yes.
Really?
And that, again, that gets to that. I think it's 160 days, that Tim Michaels issue of where is your primary residence under Wisconsin law. But in that case, there's really no sense of fraud. They're only voting
but
once.
That's why it's interesting that she's being, because it seems what the problem is the extra money.
Yes.
Not where she was voting.
This is similar. I mean, we're seeing this at the Federal Reserve right now with this mortgage issue and Trump firing. Like, we want this fixed, and this being the $10,000. So we have this other thing we can drop on you. And
like tax evasion.
That certainly seems what's happening here.
You know, it is interesting, though. Let's say someone, not Minocqua, has a place in Pica County, Trempealeau County, and here. You could actually shape if enough people like that person live just for fun up in Trempealeau County, they could actually shape a local election result.
Well, that's what I mean. Or people who live on the border of Illinois and want to vote in Wisconsin because they want their vote to count more.
It's like,
if they have a cabin in Wisconsin.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of an interesting dilemma there.
Yeah. I don't know how you prosecute that.
Illinois voter law now.
We're going to get my friend Matt O'Neill, who deals with election law. We're going to get him talk about that. I'm curious about it. Anyway, she got money. I think it's $8,000 that she shouldn't be entitled to.
Yes, that's just from the police department. That starts in 2022. If you go back a couple more years, you'd find more money there. But yes, she appears to be on the case to pay restitution.
Mm. All right. Well, do the right thing, as my dad always said. Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com. Kristen C. Point taken after the break. Lots more to talk about, including an increase in gun theft, which we talked a little bit about in the first hour. We'll move that one up the list of things we're going to discuss with Jeremy on the program today on 620 WTMJ. I want free. Free is for me, as they say. Right? Is that the slogan? Jerry Maginney, UrbanMilwaukee.com. Where's that great little store you got so people can get their Milwaukee merch?
755 North Milwaukee Street, the corner of Milwaukee and Mason, kitty corner from Hotel Metro.
Somebody I know said they went there and they said it was an amazing experience and they bought stuff.
Excellent.
Yeah, t-shirt, I think they bought.
Who decides what kind of things you're going to have in there?
The tchotchkes.
That's all my department.
Oh. That's all you.
Yes. Are you a tchotchke expert for Milwaukee?
I've become, yes. I know where all the keychains are made and the magnets.
I suppose you would, because people love that stuff. It's like going to the Dells. You got to buy all the souvenirs, you know, the weird stuff that you look at once and then, like, where is that thing I bought at the Dells?
These are treasured items. We will not say
your difference.
Do not disparage our keychains.
It's the tchotchke difference. All right, this story intrigued me. You know, obviously, we talked a lot about gun violence and mass shootings in the first hour. Written by Bruce Murphy, one of your great reporters. Gun theft saw 8-fold increase in downtown. Sort of a big deal, right?
Yeah. So looking citywide, and we're looking at the years 2019 through 2022, citywide there were 738 gun thefts in 2019. That rose to almost 1,400 in 2022. So that almost doubled. That on alone is bad. Then you look at just District 1 for MPD, which is downtown and the east side. 26 gun thefts in 2019. That's not many. 233 wow. in 2022. That's a huge spike.
All right. Describe the Bucks connection to this.
This is where it gets interesting. The city noticed a pattern that there was a lot more gun thefts reported on Bucks game days near Pfizer Forum. This is a case where actually data-driven policing has made a difference, because then the city and the Bucks got together and they started issuing a statement. Don't bring your gun downtown. Don't bring your gun to a Bucks game, even if you're just leaving your car.
Can't, that's the thing. You can't bring it into the Bucks game because there is a metal detector. And so you have to leave in your car if you're bringing it at all. And then if you leave it in your, you know, glove compartment, then it's easy to find.
Yes, apparently so, because Alderman Scott Spiker, who chairs the Public Safety Committee, talks about it's a little like a bird just hunting and pecking. It will break into a lot of cars as long as every 20 cars it can find at least one gun. So do your part and leave your gun at home. But with the Bucks started messaging this. They said, hey, secure your valuables. They kind of, all of a sudden there was just messaging around, like, secure your valuables.
Is one of the messages, don't bring your gun to the game?
they weren't quite that. Well, they didn't have to worry about that. People weren't bringing guns to the game already because they got metal detectors.
I mean, to the drive, don't drive with your gun in your glove box to the game. I mean, come on.
Despite the impression you might get listening to some people, it's remarkably safe around Pfizer Forum. You will not need your gun, I promise you. So the messaging actually appears to have worked, that the gun thefts by 2024 had cut in half downtown. So that was 100 less guns that ended up on the street. Now, some skeptics in our Facebook comment section, dangerous area to go to, were like, well, people just quit reporting their gun thefts. I would like to say this. If your gun gets stolen and you don't report it, whoa, bad. Like, that gun gets used in a crime, which is probably where a lot of stolen guns are headed. You're in for a lot of trouble. So I assume people are reporting gun thefts on
that. Yeah, we talked about that earlier. This led to one of the most amazing statements I've ever heard from the mayor of Milwaukee. Three words. Criminals aren't stupid. I think they're stupid, but, you know, whatever variation of stupid, they are smart enough to figure out that people have guns in their glove boxes. So I'll give them that. But criminals are pretty stupid because they generally get caught, in the case of Milwaukee, over and over and over again. So interesting little quote from the mayor of Milwaukee on this subject.
Yeah, I appreciate that they're stupid, so they do get caught.
But yes.
Another gun spot, hot spot for gun theft, which is somehow a tongue twister to say, is we talked about Water Street crime a couple weeks ago. The bars and nightclubs near Water and Wisconsin, the parking lots around there, that's a hot break-in spot. Again, if you're bringing a gun or parking in that area, know that that's a problem there. Again, don't bring your gun if you're going anywhere near a bar or alcohol.
This is a development question, but it is kind of weird when you look around Pfizer and it's just really ugly surface lots. Are there conversations around having more parking structures and so people aren't as vulnerable when they park downtown?
Good question.
That's a fair question. And one of the other stories that's in the queue that we may talk about is one of those full blocks is about to get 269 apartments on it. There's a parking structure in the middle of it for the residents. So when we saw the museum, they hosted an open house yesterday. Mm-hmm. I think the end solution there is a lot more development will just mean the end of those surface lots.
Okay.
Because there's not a lot of surface lots. There's just a lot of vacant land over there at the moment with That's the right. former freeway corridor. So change is coming there.
Let's do a sort of a revisit, because we talked a lot about storm cleanup and disasters in the last month. So where does that stand? I know that we're now waiting for, FEMA was here, we're now waiting for the president to do whatever the president's going to do. Hopefully he does that. What's the latest on, like, the disaster declaration, storm cleanup?
We're heading into an ugly game of poker right now, if we're not there already, where the governor said, hey, Mr. President, FEMA's been here. They've completed their work. Please make the declaration. We think we've justified it, not just in Milwaukee, but looking at like Washington County. They have tens of millions of dollars in public damage. That's public infrastructure beyond people's private homes. If the president doesn't do that, the state then has a really tough decision to make about how much aid out of a rainy day fund or some emergency fund do they release.
I'll go one step farther or further. If he doesn't, we only got 8 congresspeople. My side of the aisle's got 6 of those spots. They've been talking big about this stuff for weeks now. If your president, our president, doesn't do what he should do, because we know how bad it was for a lot of folks in this area, that's on you guys. You didn't do what you said you're going to do, is protect the citizens that you represent. So you can love this president, but on this one, all eyes on you, because this is your moment to maximize all your influence you think you have. And if they don't do that and this gets delayed and or rejected, I'm going to blast them because they deserve it, every bit of that. That's
about Ron Johnson.
Everybody deserves it. That's BS. If you're going to do one thing for us when we have disasters, you sure as hell better be fighting for us in front of the President of the United States, because he's the pen. He's the guy that signs off on this. Jerry Mangini, UrbanWalkie.com. Chris and Steve, Point Taken, 620 WTMJ. Jeremy Janine.
People call you JJ.
Rarely,
J
but
squared.
Sure.
How about Double J? Double J?
I
like Double J.
We'll keep workshopping names.
All right. I think nicknames are overrated, but we'll let that go for another occasion. All right. Our condos making a comeback.
Yeah, so we've seen all kinds of development in Milwaukee in the past 15 years, but aside from one project in Bayview, none of it has actually been for owners. It's all been rental housing. And there's a few good reasons for that now that those reasons are stacking up now because of high interest rates and growing construction prices. But the big thing is liability laws around condos. If I'm renting you an apartment and something goes wrong, you just move out and your lease ends. If I sell you something as a developer, general contractor, and army of subcontractors, that relationship between us doesn't go away. And state law, this is not just Wisconsin, but in many states, makes that very complicated for a long time. That liability lingers for a long time. Now we have demand for condos. We had all this development. We being city plan commission, city officials, are now wanting more housing, and we being the housing market is now asking for this downtown. But a number of developments have now come, and we don't see them getting to actual construction. There was a proposal on Jefferson and Pleasant, kind of by Fresh Time Market on Water Street, that in 2024 was announced. They're going to be about $1 million apiece, big townhomes. Canceled. Can't get financing. Can't justify the construction costs, sales prices. There's a proposal in the Third Ward for townhomes. It's on the drawing boards. Hasn't gone anywhere. Peter Renner, who had great success developing condos along the river in 2005 through 2010, it's just lingering. But now another Illinois developer has entered the market. Mehran Farahmandpour, and apologies if I butchered that name, but he's an architect and developer. He's coming to the former Vogue Cleaner site, which is, if you're looking for where that is, it's right by the new museum, kind of by the Time Warner Spectrum building on...
Sixth and something is the museum, right?
Yeah, so this is 4th, Val Phillips and McKinley.
Yeah.
And he wants to build a 22-unit building. He's like, I think we can do these for sale. So there's an interest now growing among developers to want to do this. But that canceled condo project at Pleasant and Jefferson, the new owner said, it's an architecture firm, that even legally on their insurance, their architecture malpractice insurance... says they can't do more than 10% of their business as condos.
A lot of stuff is linked to interest rates, and if they fall, which a lot of people predict they will because the Fed's sort of signaled that. I've talked to enough developers that build both houses, neighborhoods, and condos. They say that renewed interest can sort of catch fire with communities. And most cities, they overbuilt apartments. That was the trend.
Well, it's also
now looking the other way.
It's created a bottleneck for people who are retiring, yeah, who want to downsize, yep, but don't want to go rent an apartment. After their mortgage is paid off, don't want to go rent an apartment for $3,000 or $4,000 a month, yeah, right? Like, it's like that doesn't make any sense for their finances. And so they're just staying in their homes, thus not opening up new homes for younger people to move into. Because it's a bigger house that they want to be in. And like an older couple by themselves doesn't need that much space, but they don't want to move.
Absolutely. And the idea of just building 1,000 condos around downtown will not solve that problem quickly. Because when I talk about that $1 million price, they're all going to come in at the top, yeah, end of the market and filter down.
All right. He is Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com. Great gift shop as well. You call it a gift shop?
Urban Milwaukee, the store. Yep. Milwaukee, right, gift shop.
All right. That's also a fun place to just get your tchotchkes about the city of Milwaukee. If you're into that.
Welcome back to Point Taken. I'm Kristen Bry. He is Steve Scafidi, and we're here with Jeremy Janine of Urban Milwaukee. Now, this was the news was last week that kind of a, I don't know if bait and switch is the right word, but a surprise appointment to the Office of Community Wellness and Safety, which was the Office of Violence Prevention. The new appointee who's going to be directing that office is Adam Purcell. He was a surprise pick, and a lot of people had a lot of reactions to both the process being upended and also he is not shy about talking about his past, that he was a convicted felon and spent 20 years in jail for murdering someone. We've talked to certainly people around our office, both at The Truth and the different news shows. What has the reaction been as far as you on the ground talking to people in the aftermath of his appointment?
Well, the interesting thing is a lot of public safety officials, and I extend that the fire chief, Aaron Lipsky, the whole way to the police department, they actually seem very encouraged by his hiring. And to get to the reason why this was a surprise, incumbent Ashanti Hamilton resigns for a job at Veolia in January. The interim director, Karen Tyler, and two outsiders were finalists, and they went through this public forum. And then the mayor basically does a 180, turns around, and picks someone who didn't even apply for the job. Mm-hmm. I think if he had just started with, I want to hire Adam Purcell, he's being recommended to me, a lot of the shock factor of this wouldn't mm-hmm. be as strong. But now there's community groups that went to those two forums, and are like, wait. Now the mayor's office says, everything you said at those forums influenced how we think about the office. It was all valued feedback. And Adam Purcell will do his own meeting. But it was definitely a surprise to see him picked. It was August 18th that the mayor announced it.
So as far as you kind of have an idea of what this office is supposed to do by what the title was and title is. What do they actually do? And what does it take to be qualified to do that job?
That's a very good question. Okay. And I don't respond to that in meaning like, I don't think they do anything. It's just one of the things I wanted to ask Adam once he was introduced is, how do you define success? And he made it very clear that he could have walked into a trap and said the homicide rate or something. He made it very clear, no, that's not how I define success. He didn't exactly say what he's going to define success as, which left me a little bit questioning. But yeah, there's no stat for homicides not committed. And so how do you intervene in those situations? Will they use violence interrupter programs? They look at somewhat data-driven strategies of hotspots. They look for retaliatory violence. So if we know that there was a gang shooting that happened, they use these violence interrupters to try and go meet with those people and de-escalate. Those are things the office does. They also hand out grants to community organizations that tried all kinds of different small strategies.
This is such an amazing thing because, as we all know, anybody who's been around leadership roles in communities, big cities, small cities, that these things go up and down, they cycle. This individual could come into this job and, for whatever reason, the numbers could drop significantly. All the attention goes on, my God, what did he do there? He did something amazing. He could have done nothing, which could, in his case, and I'm not saying he can do this, could push him off into even a better job at a higher paying salary for something he has no responsibility for. I guess the fact that the thing that concerns me is there's like no, other than the metrics of crime, how do you take what you're doing, those ideas, policies, whatever you're doing, and mesh that those two things together? Because I think most public safety folks would tell you that they're not always related. It's just what's happening in the moment, what's happening in our country.
Yes. One thing that struck me that Adam said, he'll actually be the fifth director of this office now. Office goes back 2010. It became really notable under Reggie Moore starting in like 2015. Is he wants to work more closely with the police department, not that they're going to be feeding intel to the police department. There's always been a concern about that, that they need to be this trusted independent office, but that he wants to have a better relationship there to both support law enforcement and to get support from law enforcement on the ground.
Interesting stuff. I had your list up and I just lost it. But
One thing that's interesting still on Adam Purcell, there is now an infight at City Hall because Adam Purcell didn't apply for this job.
Yeah, right. Outside the way they were doing it.
He didn't apply for this job. And now the mayor's office says there was, and these are emails between the council and the mayor's office. Well, he was negotiating for a salary for this job he didn't apply for. And it's much higher than the council would like to see. I don't have the exact number yet.
Oh, interesting.
But there's some scuttlebutt happening.
Here's the other thing. Someone sent me this last week when we were talking about this. Typically, when you have candidates, there's background checks. You do a background check on him. Pretty significant stuff back there. Now, you can overlook it if you want, but...
Well, I would... If we're talking about... This is my thing with this, as someone who's never been arrested. But I have to imagine that they're... Like, that also disqualifies me to ever be qualified for this job, because my ability to relate to people who have committed crimes, are in the environment where crime is committed often... Like, I'm not going to be able to relate to these people. And so having someone who comes from a background that is much closer and actually can relate to, like, listen, you don't want to go to prison. I don't know if that is a disqualification for this role. And, I mean, if we believe in rehabilitation, we have to believe in rehabilitation.
Yeah, there's a process that you're paying for to someone to put you these candidates through a process. Then you just discard it like oh, we don't care what we spend.
Are you saying about the process, or are you saying about the fact that he was a felon?
I think it's concerning to some people.
I'm sure it's concerning, but I'm just saying
it's not the same thing. But it's
should
like
we
saying,
not also believe that people can go on to productive lives and have value for the experience that they've gone through, especially in situations like this?
And not a fair comparison, but I don't have to have cancer to know cancer is bad. So, I mean, I don't know that you necessarily have to have criminal background.
But I think
to
your
fix
ability to relate to someone who has cancer is limited.
You could get the same ability by reading a book about people who are in prison.
I don't think that's true.
I think it is.
I don't think I can. Oh, okay.
All right, we got to take a break. Cherry Maginni will do it again next week. She's Chris and I'm Steve. Fun one after the break, we promise, after a week of bad news and sad news. We'll do that next on 620 WTMJ. Oh, how about a little Springsteen to walk into this segment? All right. You don't have to be from Oak Creek to know this is one of the biggest festival weekends in the summer. All the South Side, even people from farther than that, they come to Oak Creek for
even
the...
Franklin. Does Franklin come to this?
Our mortal enemies. Our rivals. Our bitter rivals, especially when it comes to high school football. Oak Creek Lions Fest, Labor Day weekend. It's a tradition. It goes way, way back into... Well, he'll tell me. Scott Koenig, member... Former presidents, he's had a million titles with the organization. One of those organizations, which is not easy to do, I just said this at one of the at a city event recently, is actually growing. When other organizations, it's amazing. Scotty Koenig joins us on the phone. Hey, Scott.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
All right.
Yes, we are growing, and we were featured on one of the TV stations last year. That we're like one of the last surviving big festivals in the area. They're all folding up, they can't get help, and the cost of everything. So we've been getting bigger and bigger every year, and it's incredible what's happening. And the more as big as the festival gets, the bigger our club gets. So we just keep churning. So
how long have you guys been doing this?
Our club was chartered in 1958. Our very first festival was in 1959.
Oh wow.
And,
that's what
so this is 65th festival because we had to miss 1 year, of course.
So did you grow up going to this, Steve?
Everybody went to this. This was a tradition. When you're in high school and even younger than that, it's a big deal. But there's so much more to talk about. So let's hit some of the highlights. I know you got the list in front of you. I got it in front of me. There's a lot of cool stuff that happens. Let's go through it.
Yeah, we've got over 30 bands. We've got booked over three different venues. We got a senior day. We got family day, kids. Face painting, a car show that draws between 200 and 300 cars on Sunday, Veterans Appreciation Day, carnival, meat raffles. Over the course of the weekend, we raffle off over 2 tons of meat. So
it's wild.
It's incredible. I mean, we can't get enough product in here some days.
Hey,
it's awesome.
Don't sleep on the big cash raffle. I just saw the amount of money you guys are handing out.
Yeah, we got a cash raffle, $8,000 total prize money. There's 50 winners all together, $5,000 first prize. We've got a huge carnival. We've got just about everybody covered here, kids, veterans, seniors. Anybody can come down here and find something that they like and have fun with. And the food's awesome. The beer's
cold.
It is awesome.
I think you said senior twice. Is that because I'm doing the interview? Is that why you're saying it?
I'm right there with you, pal.
I know you are. That's why I said it. All right. So easy to find the information if you've never been, oakcreeklions.com. You're blessed with what looks like a spectacular weather weekend, which is always something you have to think about. So that looks amazing. I want you to talk about the Lions because I love your group. I will be a Lion at some point when I retire from doing this. I found out this bit of information, Scott. As will my wife, Kathy, also interested. I don't know if you knew that.
Oh, is that a men's only club?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, so tell us about the Lions.
Yeah, Lions International actually changed their charter back in, like, the 80s, where they actually encouraged women to join the men in this Lions Club adventure. So our club has, I don't know, we must have 30, 40 women in our club. 160 total members now. When I joined the club 18 years ago, we had 80. So every year we get more members and we grow. But this is our biggest fundraiser of the year. This fills our checkbook for the whole next 12 months. Last year we donated back, because of this festival, almost $150,000 to probably 30 to 35 different charities and nonprofits.
Yeah.
Food pantries, scholarships, all the sports teams at the high school, new scoreboards for the high school. We hand out lots and lots of money. This is like 2 weeks of work for this festival. But then the fun part is we get to write checks and hand out money and make smiles all over Oak Creek. And there's some statewide charities that we donate to also.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I want to be part of this once I stop doing what I'm doing on the radio. Lions Fest this Friday through Monday. The American Legion Post is where it's located, 434 Post, 9327 South Shepherd Avenue, sort of the center of the city. Lots of room, lots of parking, lots of fun. It's always fun to talk to you. We'll see you out there.
Awesome. We appreciate the time here, Steve.
All right, anytime. Oak Creek Lions, Lions Fest this weekend, this Labor Day weekend. We'll wrap up this week's of shows. Chris and Steve, Point Taken, 620 TMJ.
I am Steve. There are many other Steve.
I didn't prompt this, Kristen. This just happens naturally.
Where's my Kristen song?
I don't know. Somebody sent us a good Kristen song to the text line or to steve-52fs1d at wtmj.com.
I'll commission someone to make one.
Well, this is brilliant songwriting and lyricism here. Bring it up a little bit, just a little taste. Come on. Jazz is completely ignoring me. There we go. So you're off to a wedding.
I'm off to a wedding in Minnesota. Have you been to the Aces Casino in Minnesota?
I never have been, which is surprising.
There's horse racing.
Oh, like real horse racing?
I think so.
Well, that's cool.
So we'll be there, and then there's some, I don't know what the farm is, that the venue is, but yeah, it'll be fun. I mean, my family's very fun, and so I'm excited to see everyone.
And I'm doing some stuff this weekend, but I want to tell you that there's still a few seats left for our Cancun trip. Those are selling quickly as we thought they would. It's in February. 866-GO-FOX-GO, foxworldtravel.com, group travel. It's a come-along
trip.
You
may not be getting a tattoo on this one, though. So no. That value add is not there.
I thought about doing like a pre-tattoo, and I thought, no, I'm not going to convolute the two things.
No, you've already sold all the people.
Yes.
All the people who have bought flights and tickets to go to Hawaii with you.
Yes.
I'm sure some of them are going because you've sold this tattoo idea so much. Yeah. So you can't ruin that by getting a tattoo before.
My wife, Kathy, says it's because they want to see me cry in person.
Yeah.
I'm not going to cry. Why would I cry?
I mean, you might wince a little bit.
Of course, but I'm not going to cry about it. I'm excited about it.
Yeah.
It's a game changer. Yeah. I'll be one of those.
I don't know if that's true.
That tattoo, that's
a game
changer.
You think you're going to be like a lot cooler once you have a tattoo?
I'm already cool. So
are you going to feel like, yeah, I got a tattoo?
Yeah. Hey, check this out. Hey, whoa.
Just showed it off.
Check out the gun. I don't know if that's going to be the case. For all the folks who say, yeah, I love the Lions Fest, there's other things happening. Yeah, there's a lot of things happening. Walworth County Fair, St. Francis Days, go all that stuff. Have fun. But
good weather.
Yeah, enjoy the weather.
Local communities. Get out there.
Do you buy into this as the last big weekend of the summer? I kind of do. Because I shift.
It shifts, right? Now it shifts into like Packer games.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's not like there's less to do. But the weather certainly feels like it's shifted.
Yeah,
I'm such a hot summer. I hope we still have some warm days left in September.
I heard one of the TMJ4 meteorologists, might have been Brian, saying that there's going to be some 80s left. Okay. So that's good. Let's not get too quickly into winter. All right.
I'm not ready for the sweaters.
Safe travels.
Thanks.
See you Monday.
Have fun with the boys tomorrow.
You guys all have fun on the long Labor Day weekend. We'll see you actually on Tuesday, right? Yeah, Tuesday next week.